Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm here coughing up a lung. Kyle's here in good health, in fine health, except for, you know, the events of the fucking weekend.
The ennui, which comes from being a Bears fan.
That's right. Yep, we're feeling good health-wise, but mentally scarred, broken, shattered to pieces by the Dan Campbell revenge tour, I guess. He took no prisoners. Huh, Kyle?
Yeah, no, that was, Lord.
I just want to say I support Steve Spurrier and his way of thinking, so I have no problem with it, but boy, that felt personal out there.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't blame the Lions at all for, you know, for, I mean, hell, you did it on this podcast where you were just like, the Lions ain't shit without Ben Johnson. They ain't nothing. That's right. And you know, I think a whole week of hearing that, no wonder they went off and they wanted to prove a point.
You think Dan Campbell took personal offense to what I said?
Well, I think that you were just one of many because you've never had an original thought in your life. So there were just a lot of people.
No new ideas under the sun.
There was a lot of that out there. And, you know, the Lions, I don't blame them for taking that seriously at all. But yeah, I mean, the Bears, they got fucking taken to the woodshed. And I almost want to.
Specifically, the Bears defense. Like, let's be specific.
Well, that's what I was actually going to say. Like, should we just get. I think we both agree that there was one unquestionably, well, not unquestionably because people question it, because of course they fucking question it with this guy, but like you and I both agree based on the tape, there was a positive to this game for sure. Did we just talk about that?
I can think of one unquestionable positive and one pretty, like, mostly positive.
Okay, well, what's your unquestionable positive in case it's not the same as mine?
It's Caleb. It's got to be
okay,
Caleb.
That's what I was going to say. What's your questionable positive?
Rome.
Why is that questionable for you? Is it because he dropped those passes? Because, yeah,
it's,
he does.
Yep, and I think, I know you take personal offense to it. You take deeper offense when he drops a catch in traffic. And I'm kind of like, well, God, he did everything else well. But yeah, you sold me on Rome with the catch in traffic rate, right?
Yeah, the contested catch, I feel like the contested catch ability has not popped in the NFL as much as I thought it would. But at the same time, like, the separation has been fucking crazy. And I thought people, like, last year, I thought people were way too harsh on him. Like I really enjoyed Matt Harmon. You know, he does reception perception. He broke it down on Rome last year, and he was like, he's got an incredible success rate against man. The issue is against zone, and I think a lot of that has to do with Shane Waldron's truly bizarro wide receiver usage. And, like, look, Caleb didn't always see Rome last year, and they didn't always get on the same page. And Caleb also just had some trouble with the deep ball, and Rome was mostly getting open deep. But, like, the separation from, I mean, like, you'll live with the occasional dropped contested catch, as frustrating as in the moment. I definitely let off a few swears because you really want to see Rome bring some of those in. But, like, the separation, that's a repeatable process, and he's burning dudes. He's getting open consistently. He obviously, and we'll talk about this when we get into the bad, DJ Moore knows he's not wide receiver. I don't think he's wide receiver one anymore in Chicago. I think he knows that. He's acting accordingly. That's for damn sure. Rome's the big dog. So that is unquestionable. Yeah, I would have liked to see him make the contested catches, especially Caleb had the one scramble throw. What was it, on like third and the seventh or eighth time they had third and 30 something in that game. And Caleb got it to him, and it would have made it like a fourth and two, and Rome dropped it. That was tough. And it would have been an incredible highlight reel play for Caleb if Rome had come down with that. But no, I was very pleased with Rome. But yeah, no, the positive for me was, you know, I walked out of that game, and then I felt pretty good about it on broadcast view, and then I watched it. The All 22 felt even better. I thought Caleb Williams really did look quite good. I think the things that got the offense off track in that game, you know, the DeAndre Swift fumble, the penalties, and for the most part, they weren't even the false start penalties that we had been seeing, which I don't think that's entirely attributable to Caleb, but I do think there have been times where him and Ben both trying to utilize Cadence as a weapon, especially against the Vikings, kind of caused some of those false starts, or they were slow to the line. I thought Caleb was much quicker at getting to the line of scrimmage.
Agreed.
This week. that was clear. There weren't the false starts. The penalties that did get called were just, you know, fucking chop block and holding and those kind of things. So that's pure. None of those could possibly be blamed on Caleb. Although,
yeah, Caleb is, he's starting to get the classic Cutler tendency of taking one wasteful timeout a game where it appears like maybe the call didn't get in, but
he doesn't,
it's just the one.
But he doesn't take the timeout cunty enough. Like,
yeah.
Jay, if he really wants to master that, like, Jay, like, I can still to this day picture the exact way, like, just, would, like, it was like he was trying to saw one of his hands in half with his fingertips, like, because he would just be like, oh, fuck it, god damn it, timeout.
You could tell that he was blaming every other bear for that timeout as he did it.
And it was best when it was with Martz, because, like, you know, he really, like, him and Martz, and I think they actually did like each other, but I think him and Martz motherfucked each other all the time, to an extent that, you know, the other offensive coordinators he had maybe didn't, but... Caleb, he's got the dejected timeout down a little bit, but he needs to work on the presentation a little bit. You got to be real cunty about it. Jay was always real cunty about it.
Yeah, so that's one part of his game he really needs to work on going into next week.
But no, I mean, I thought just, you know, Ted Nguyen of The Athletic, I was really glad he did it, because I was trying to keep count myself too. He only had Caleb down for like four out of structure plays in the entire game, you know, which no one will acknowledge. No one wants to discuss that is, but like every play he made for the most part was on time from the pocket. There were some very good high level throws. He really showed off the arm talent on some of those outbreakers to Rome.
Yeah.
And yeah, the interception, like, we should acknowledge the interception. We should say
that was
bad,
a dumbass
bad
interception.
Bad Caleb. Don't throw it again, because our dear buddy Eric's going to be so mad at us if we don't properly castigate him for that interception.
That's right. I mean, I've gotten to wondering, because it is just a dumbass throw, and it stuck out because he didn't have as many Jesus Christ in this game.
No,
I only had him down for
three Jesus Christ in this game. But like I said, that was because that interception was so stupid. I went Jesus Christ, and that counts for two.
That's right. So. He got two on one play. I did wonder. So that play, Kurt Warner did a little bit of a further review that kind of went a bit viral. And he said, like, I don't know what this play is supposed to accomplish. You got three receivers in the same area. And the people in the comments kind of yelled at him, like, Kurt, Colston Loveland is wide open. Caleb looks right at him, but he's about to get sacked is what happened on that play. He rolls out to the right. I do wonder, is that something, you know, that felt like an actual coachable moment? Because I bet Caleb goes to Ben and says, hey, like, this play is fully designed to go to one guy. If I can't throw it because I'm about to get, what do I do? Like, what do you want me to do? Yeah. Because I kind of, you know, and he said this before, if he is thinking on the fly, if he's not sure about what he's doing, if he's not confident, that's when inaccuracy happens. And he tries to throw it away, but he keeps it in bounds and throws it to a lion. Like, you know, just a total brain fart. So maybe there is something to learn.
Well, and just like, the least of my concerns with Caleb Williams is bozo interceptions. That's his seventh interception in something like 600 career pass attempts now. Like, it's not until that becomes a consistent problem, that is a whatever, and you move on, especially because it was second and 32. Like, the bozo gene comes out on second and 32, and the best way to avoid that is to just not get into second and 32. And really, just in general, I felt like, in terms of when you were looking at this, when they stayed on schedule, when the game was still at hand for a little bit, like, the Bears offense was getting pretty much everything they wanted. Caleb was executing very well, executing on time. I didn't feel like Detroit fooled him. The tape was incredibly encouraging, and the accuracy, you know, he sprayed a couple still, but like, the accuracy was definitely not concerning to the degree that it was in week one. And he talked about how hard he focused on his footwork this week. I felt like that was obvious. But yeah, no, I mean, as concerned as I was about Caleb in week one, specifically because I said, like, yeah, from a processing standpoint, things look good. But like, man, those misses have got to go away, and they got to go away fast. For 1 week, at least, they were gone. And then you could really focus on how the processing looked good from the pocket. And I think this offense, like I said, it's cope a lot of the time when you say they didn't stop us, we stopped us. But I feel like that was pretty true of the Bears offense in this game. Like, they really only... the only thing that really ended drives were the DeAndre Swift fumble and then penalties that they committed. So, like, if I feel like this is fairly close to clicking on that side of the ball.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an offense in progress for at least, you know, another month or so,
yeah.
Probably a bit more than that. That's just the way it is with Ben Johnson's offense. But I would say overall, man, Caleb is really picking this up fast. He seems yeah. he seems to enjoy what he's doing out there. And yeah, just he was accurate. I saw only one play where he turned down an open guy and ran instead. And I feel like week one, he had like five. There was Oz was like wide open for he was on a crossing route. He was like 5 yards in front of him and Caleb kind of bailed a bit too quick, but he ran for 7 yards. So it's like, you know, it was OK. Like it wasn't a disaster of a play, but that was only once in this yeah. game, which is huge compared to the first
yeah.
week.
Yeah, well, and I feel like when Caleb, not to make excuses for him or anything, I feel like when, especially looking at week one, like when Caleb turns stuff down, it's really, and JT O'Sullivan made the same point too, it's really not the kind of like horrifying turn downs that you saw with Justin Fields. It's usually with Caleb, you know, because Justin Fields, the defining question of the Justin Fields era is the number of times that I went, hold on, my son is, he left something in the den.
Yeah, he did.
He hurry up and get it.
Well,
everybody, all Scottcast listeners, say hello to my son Augie. He forgot his Nintendo Switch. All right, good
I can't
night,
believe
champ.
On your side you close like stop door. You don't ignore that. On my side, I've got cats playing piano, I've got dogs barking yeah. at raccoons, you know, yeah. and I power through it.
Okay, the Switch has been retrieved. Okay, and the studio's closed back up. Well, I have respect for our audience, so I usually try to keep my studio hermetically
sealed. I have respect for how much our audience loves my piano-playing cat.
That's exactly. No, but JT O'Sullivan is saying, you know, or with Fields, the defining question was always like, why the fuck didn't he throw it? I could never explain it. With Caleb, usually when I see a turn down, it's one of the situations where I'm like, yeah, you'd like him to trigger it there. But, and I can always say, like, well, he was probably focused on this defender that was lurking a little close and could have made a play. And I still think it's just a question of, like, you want him to learn to be just a tad bit more aggressive. But it doesn't feel like analysis paralysis quite the way that it was with Justin Fields. So, and yeah, even then, still less of that in week two than week one. And Ben Johnson, like I said, I don't know if I talked about this in the podcast, but, like, one thing that really annoys me about the cognitive dissonance people have with Ben Johnson is they want to believe in Ben. A lot of people want to believe in Ben Johnson. They don't want to believe in Caleb Williams. So the only way to reconcile those two thoughts is that they make up the secret conspiracy that Ben Johnson, despite very obviously coming here for the opportunity to coach Caleb Williams, didn't actually want to come here to coach Caleb Williams. And he secretly already wants Tyson Bagent. And so when Ben Johnson says good things about Caleb and the progress he's making and stuff, that's just bland coach speak. But when he talks about how much he loves Tyson Bagent, that's real shit. But Ben Johnson, I feel like, has shown very early on, especially like talking after the Kansas City game when he was like, yeah, sounds like good protection on that ugly sack Caleb took. He won't mince words about anybody. And he you know, we'll get to this in a second when we talk about DJ Moore. I think he fired some shots across the bow of the team in general this week when he was talking about attitude of players when they know they're not getting the ball. And earlier today he said, our practices are not reflecting the habits of a championship team yet.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to mince words. So I feel like it is noteworthy when Ben Johnson was asked about Caleb in week two, and he said, yeah, I saw a lot of progress. It's not perfect. There are still a couple plays where our eyes aren't exactly where we want them to be. There's a couple plays where the ball maybe was in our hands a tick longer than it needed to be, but I saw a lot of progress from week one to week two, and I saw a lot of plays where we were getting to number three and number four in our progression, and it's very encouraging. And so even today, when Ben Johnson was like, process-wise, approach-wise, Caleb is exactly where he needs to be today. And I feel like that's honest from him, because I feel like you can trust him to be pretty honest. And that's exactly how I felt. I walked away from that thinking, yeah, Caleb's getting this. And it's hard for me to then be discouraged at all, because even though the box score results weren't super glamorous, the only question we really had with Caleb and Ben Johnson was, can Caleb get this? Just can he get it? Can he play on time?
Yeah.
I'm seeing that already, which leads me to think that down the road, as the offense as a unit gets this stuff down, we're going to see exponential growth at some point.
Well, and I think regarding Ben, I mean, we have proof that he is hardest on the people he expects the most of. He was pretty harsh on Caleb during training camp and the
preseason. He was, yeah.
He, like you said, he didn't mince words. You know, he was like, we're not where we need to be. We're sloppy. We're not even breaking the huddle right. I mean, he kind of went after him. So, yeah, to hear him after this game say, yeah, looked real good, you know, like yeah. Except for a couple things here and there, I was really happy with it. That lines up with what we saw on tape. One thing I wanted to say, which by its non-existence made me very pleased. It doesn't feel like Caleb has been damaged in the way that we kind of feel that Justin Fields was by having to play behind a disaster of an offensive line. To me, what Caleb demonstrated in this game is he's not hearing footsteps, right? All he took 4 sacks, but those sacks were so fast.
Yeah.
Almost impossible to avoid. And he's not out there panicking. He's not in the pocket like, oh, I'm about to die. Even when Braxton is about to get him killed, he's like, I'm going to sit here. We're going to go through my progressions. I'm going to try to throw it to the guy who's going to be open. And I just think that's very impressive because we have had quarterbacks who just go straight to those footsteps if they get picked on, you know, for a season. So that's nice.
The most encouraging thing about Caleb so far is the improvement in the sack avoidance. And I thought that this would happen to a degree because, you know, what I found is a lot of guys take a lot of sacks their rookie year, but usually you see the pressure to sack rate and stuff start to stabilize from year two on closer to what it was for those guys in college. Which is to say that I don't think Caleb's ever going to be Patrick Mahomes, where he is almost impossible to sack, but I don't think he's going to be, I think he's, you know, going to be closer to like a Kyler Murray or an Aaron Rodgers, where it's like, yeah, he takes his fair share of sacks, but, you know, not like an egregious amount and not because he's a deer in the headlights kind of thing. And so his pressure to sack rate, which was almost 30% last year, right now it's like exactly at 20%. But also more importantly, last year he was, you know, the 10th highest in the NFL as a quarterback in terms of percentage of pressures that were blamed on the quarterback per PFF. So he was creating a lot of his own pressure. This year, he through 2 games, he's down to 22nd in that. So he's not created, and only 2 of the 6 sacks have been, was he assigned even partial responsibility by PFF? The other 4 sacks, completely not his fault. My guess is of the 2 that they said were his fault, well, one of them was obviously against the Vikings when he fucking stepped out of bounds and did the Trubisky sack.
Yeah.
Can't really blame anybody else for that. And then I'm not sure what the other one they deemed his responsibility probably was, but again, not a big deal. That's staunchly, I think, 15th in the NFL as well in terms of a lot of quarterbacks so far have been responsible for at least 2 of their own sacks through 2 games. But yeah, it was just really encouraging stuff. Like I think because the box score results haven't lined up yet, people aren't really seeing it. And because he has had a couple weird misses, and what's weird is he's had a couple weird misses on short throws. And the main reason I'm not concerned about that at all is I think that is very much a new offense scheme thing, because some of those misses I think are, well, we had the 3rd down, I think it was, where Caleb very clearly and I think correctly expected Oz to break out, and Oz instead broke in towards the leverage, and then you saw Oz make a my bad gesture right after the play. But he's only completing 69% of his short passes this year, where last year he completed 81% of those. In college, he completed 81% of those. So I would expect that to regress to the mean. But the encouraging thing there is that he's completing 70% of his intermediate throws right now, and he's completing 40% of his deep balls. So like the 2 things everyone was really the most concerned about entering the season, the sacks and the accuracy beyond 10 yards, both of those things have massively improved. There's just some weirdness and some, you know, general offensive sloppiness that's keeping the other stuff from really putting it all together. But I think it's closer than people maybe realize from the box scores and certainly from the actual scores of the games themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might be suffering from the classic Jay Cutler, you're the best player on the field, so people are going to target you, why didn't you do more kind of syndrome. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to overstate it. He played good, not great. You'd love to see more great games as the season goes along, but you know, there are a million mitigating factors that are going to stop that for
you. Yeah, I mean, and I would even say like,
he's looking good and I'm very encouraged.
Yeah. I mean, he gave the kind of effort that if the Bears defense had balled out and held the Lions to 17 points and the Bears win, I don't think anybody's disappointed at all with the game Caleb played. It's just, and then there's literally only 1 quarterback in NFL history, as far as I know, who has won a game where their defense gave up 50 points. So it's weird that anybody would, because I saw a lot of people. Well, let's talk about some of the false narratives that I have seen about this, where it's like, well, the defense gives up that many points because Caleb's not sustaining drives. They gave up 28. The defense gave up 28 points in the first half. I don't care if the offense punted every drive, which they didn't. They scored two touchdowns, drove deep in Detroit territory, and had a swift fumble on a third. There's no excuse for a defense to be so tired that they give up 28 points in one half. But second of all, in the whole game, the Lions won time of possession by 40 seconds. You cannot excuse this away with Caleb. The Bears gained over 340 yards, I believe. They converted on over 50% of their third down attempts. They were doing just fine. They shot themselves in the foot score-wise on a couple drives with penalties, but like they were possessing the ball. The defense being tired is not an excuse. So when people are like, "Oh, Caleb needed to take the pressure off of his defense," he was doing his best. The defense just fucking let him down.
The defense being tired thing really only comes into play around the fourth quarter, folks. If it's before that, if you're the third quarter and you're tired, we're talking conditioning. If you're trying to make the claim that the defense is tired in the second quarter, that's just not possible. You're saying that NFL level athletes are just tired that early in an NFL game. It doesn't matter how often you're out there in the second quarter. You're fine at that point. And if you're not, God, that is a huge indictment on the coaching staff and not on your offense, especially an offense that, like you said, especially in the first half, the Bears offense moving the ball, just losing on fumbles. You had penalties that derailed drives, but they scored.
They were this close to, if the defense could have held, they were this close to going into the half down 21-14 and with the ball to start the third quarter. Like it could have, they could have potentially ended up in a situation where the game was tied in the third quarter if the defense held up there into the bargain. They didn't. And that should really, I joked with you that I wasn't going to do the podcast today. All I wanted to do was say they gave up 52 fucking points. Nothing else matters, because that's ultimately, as far as the result of the game, that is true. Like, Dan Wiederer, who I can't fucking stand, was on the score today saying, like, I found it really amusing how people were like, well, Caleb wasn't the main problem, wasn't the reason they lost by that much. Well, you drafted him number one overall to do more than that. Expect more. And then, like, okay. Yeah, I don't think anyone's saying that what Caleb's done through two games is the most you can expect from him this year. But, like, he wasn't just not the reason they lost by that much. He wasn't a factor to me in them losing at all in that game. He did play well. He played better than his stats indicated. He played better than the final score indicated. The defense just truly, like, there's nothing you can do when your defense gives up 52 points. And they gave up 52 points, honestly. Yes, DeAndre Swift fumbled, and I think Detroit later scored on that drive because the defense couldn't stop him. But DeAndre fumbled deep in Detroit territory. So it's not like they were just handing him pick sixes and everything else. The defense just straight up got their ass beat, and there's not a quarterback in history, literally not one, except 2018 Patrick Mahomes, that it's fair to expect them to keep them in the game when the defense gives up 52 points. Like, that's absurd.
Right. I was going to bring up Pat Mahomes, just as a counterpoint. Like, did you see that Eagles Chiefs game? Did you see the quality of quarterback play between the two teams who played in the Super Bowl last year? Like, what a hellacious slog that was. And I don't see anybody out here like, why didn't Patrick Mahomes do more? It's all excuses for everybody. Well, the defenses are really good. Well, he doesn't have the guys around him. Well, blah, 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 blah. And everybody else accepts these excuses for certain guys. And for other guys, it's like, oh, it's just time to dogpile more. You know, there's this huge loss for the Bears. You can clearly tell that players on the field were Caleb and Rome. And oh my God, does everybody else have a share in the fault on this? But for them, there's no excuses, right? Nobody else is like, well, literally the defense was like just made of cardboard. Like, they barely moved. Tyreek Stevenson is the worst defensive back in the league suddenly. You know, like, Braxton Jones is trying to get Caleb murdered on every single play. It's just, no, I'm sorry, buddy, you were the number one pick. You got to do everything. But then we go over to Cam Ward, and it's like,
yes, I'm glad you brought up Cam Ward.
Poor baby Cameron.
Yeah, I was looking in, like, do you remember how much panic there was last year after Caleb started 0-2, he didn't start 0-2, but after those two bad games against the Titans and the Texans?
Yeah, against the Titans, like,
The way people were he'd taken 9 sacks through two games, it was a disaster. Is this guy, Cam Ward has taken 11 sacks in two games, guys, and some of them are truly hysterical sacks, just absolutely cartoonishly clownish. He's currently on pace to take 94 sacks in this season. He has completed exactly 50% of his passes. It's been nothing short of disastrous, and I don't hear anybody talking about it. And I'm not saying that you should be. Like, he's a rookie. He's an overmatched rookie. He's a rookie behind a bad offensive line. I think Cam Ward should get the grace that every rookie QB should get, which is that as a rookie, all you really need to do is A, not be historically bad, B, flash some cool stuff every week, and C, broadly improve as the year goes along. And then we'll see you in year two, champ. That's all I think everyone should do with a rookie quarterback. But it's so funny how, like I said, you know, Caleb Williams didn't play, in my opinion, and in many statistical ways, he was not that much different than Kyler Murray as a rookie. He was very broadly similar. He was very better than Trevor Lawrence as a rookie, but I don't remember any of the level of panic around those guys entering year two of their career because everyone was like, yeah, they're rookies. And also because they played in Arizona and Jacksonville and nobody was watching them fuck up every snap.
Right.
Because nobody cares about Arizona or Jacksonville, just like nobody cares about the Tennessee Titans. So it's really funny.
Speaking of nobody caring about Jacksonville, God, did you see Trevor Lawrence just basically tell his new head coach to fuck off and just wave him off? That looked familiar.
God, can you imagine? Yeah, can you imagine if Caleb Williams did that? Can you? I mean, Bo Nix and Sean Payton were arguing on the sidelines again.
Yeah. Travis Kelce is yelling at his coaches, like, you know, but Caleb Williams is out here. He's just playing football. He seems to be following the structure. He's having good games, not great games, but I guess he's the sole reason the Bears had this disastrous loss.
But I guess, and it's also just like I think the thing that people are continuing to neglect in all of this is that these were two teams that they faced that won 14 plus games last year. Yeah. I think this, I read somewhere like the Bears are the first team to start the season against two different teams that won 14 games the year before since like the 1930s or something. It doesn't happen that often. And I mean, like, Michael Penix became a media darling for some fucking reason because he had that was really hilarious all offseason long was the Michael Penix hype based entirely off of one good game against the Panthers, which is really funny because does anyone remember what Caleb Williams did against the Panthers last year? Can you imagine what the Caleb Williams narrative would be if he only played like three games all year long like Penix did and one of them was the Panthers game? Oh, yeah. It would have been astronomical. And then Penix went out there and was, in my opinion, considerably worse against the Falcons or against the Vikings defense than Caleb was.
Yeah.
Then nobody's talking about it. There's no concern over Michael Penix whatsoever. It's just
unquestionably
so stupid all the time.
JJ McCarthy is his draft mate, who we saw in week one, has already been shadow benched.
I don't buy that he was shadow. I know that's fun for you, and I'll let you have it. I don't buy that he was shadow benched. I do.
He's out 2 to 4 weeks. He did you see the play? That his head coach said it happened on? He just hopped right up and he went out and snapped the ball for the rest of the game. It was fine.
I hate to go all Al Bundy on you here, but I mean on the play where I literally had a helmet crack a bone fragment in my left knee and tear my MCL, I finished the quarter before I got to the car and was like, hey, my leg isn't bending anymore. Is that a problem?
You used to be an adventurer too until you got that arrow to the knee is what you're saying.
Yeah. No, anyways, I spent more time on this than I thought. We were half hour in, but like, yeah, as usual, we call the episode "Everybody Hates Caleb."
Shitting on people.
Let's get to shitting. But first, I think we're going to spend a lot of time shitting on the defense, and I think we're going to spend some time shitting on the general manager who assembled it. But before we do that, let's shit on a couple offensive players. Number one, the guy who I am very positive got called out by his head coach, DJ fucking Moore. And I don't know
that's number one, not Braxton. Okay,
we have not gone in on DJ Moore on this pod. I don't think yet. Last year, God, did we try to give him the benefit of the doubt. The frustration with how Shane Waldron was using those guys felt so real. But, like, here's the thing. I've been pretty mad at DJ since week two last year when on week two on national TV he was fucking showing up Caleb Williams. He was caught screaming, I need you, bro, to Tyson Bagent on fucking national TV. In week fucking two.
Yeah.
2 weeks. It took him 2 weeks to throw a public hissy fit at his rookie quarterback. And I know people are like, well, he's not he's there to get paid. He's there to play. He's not there to develop the rookie quarterback. They paid him last offseason to specifically to ensure that he would know, like, hey, we see you as a foundational piece of this. We see you as someone that we want around, and you're protected no matter whether your stats do take a hit with a rookie quarterback. They paid him to specifically to avoid that, and it still took him 2 weeks to be a fucking baby about it. And he fucking walked off the field while the play was still live against Arizona. And, you know, you can, you guys can go watch any video JT O'Sullivan made about the Bears last year and see the instances of him pointing out DJ Moore walking, not giving anywhere close to 100% speed on routes where he wasn't the primary read. And then in week one last week, he fucking audibled. He went rogue on a route. The corner route would have been open. Caleb was fucking throwing it. It was the right read. Then DJ converts it to a go route. It looks like a horrific miss. Caleb's taking a bunch of shit. I thought it was very noteworthy that Declan Doyle seemed pretty pissed about DJ doing that, and made sure to lay all the blame on DJ for that one.
Yeah, and here he is in week two. I saw his plays. Yeah,
his target share went way down. The number of plays where he was the first read went way down, and I feel like that was intentional by Ben Johnson, obviously for just because Rome's playing really well, but also I think he wanted to see, like, will DJ respond positively to this? And the answer is no. And he literally said, he's like, we have some guys that we're not pleased with their effort when on plays where they're not getting the ball. And that's real big for us. We know Ben Johnson's system, no block, no rock. And yeah, I mean, there's a couple plays, DJ Moore in this game. He got lucky that Rome hurdled a guy on their first touchdown. Because that guy was supposed to be fucking
I wanted to talk about that play real bad, because yeah, no block, no rock. And I went back and I watched every single different receiver straight through and just kept my eye on him, because I was like, God, I hope I'm not just saying this is DJ Moore. I hope it's not obviously someone else. I know a lot of people mentioned DeAndre Swift because his pass pro isn't great. It's not that he's not trying, though. He is putting forth a ton of effort to try to block guys. He's just not that kind of player, but I promise he is putting the effort in. God, on that touchdown to fucking Rome, he is out there clearing out for Rome. It works beautifully, just like Ben drew it up. Rome catches the ball. DJ, instead of blocking downfield, instead of blocking his guy, walks off the field, walks, stops looking at the play, turns away from Rome, and walks away. Rome has to do a juke to get to the end zone, because DJ's man is still available to tackle him. Because I guess because Precious Princess DJ Moore didn't get the fucking ball on the play is over when someone else catches it. That's not even the one that gave me the stroke, and I'm already fucking yelling at this. There was another play. I said immediately the message, like, I'm going to have a stroke about that play later, I promise. And sure enough, on the All-22, it's a play completely inconsequential in the game. The Bears scored their second touchdown on this one on a nice, hard route by Rome Odunze, which I really, really want to highlight. Like, he is working so hard on all these routes, even when he doesn't think he's going to catch it. So big ups to Rome. But DJ, earlier in that drive, he is supposed to pretend that he's blocking. He releases from the block, and then he rolls to the right. He is on a drag. We know that he's supposed to roll to the fucking right because Colston Loveland is on a drag for the other side of the field running behind him. And the whole goal of the play, I bet you, was not to have Colston Loveland run headlong into fucking DJ Moore. Instead, DJ comes off his block and stops. And he just, nope, he stands there. He practically puts his fucking hands on his hips. And then Caleb, seeing that DJ is actually the wide open guy on this play and that there is green grass in front of him, he's got at least a first down, throws the ball to him as if he is going to continue to go to the right. DJ throws one left hand out, and the ball goes off the fingertip. So you watch that live, and you say, oh, Caleb inaccurate on a short pass again.
Yeah.
But you look at the fucking All-22, and it's DJ Moore not blocking, coming off his block, and just being fucking lazy.
Is that the same one I'm thinking of where Caleb, it was a scramble throw, right? Caleb was like rolling right at that.
Yep,
yeah,
he's rolling right.
Threw that one. Caleb threw that one. He led what would have been a running DJ perfectly to give him time to get, like, and with DJ's ability to get yards after the catch, that could have been a huge play.
Oh, it looked for all the world like it was going to be 20, 30 yards.
DJ just fucking stopped running. And again, it looks like Caleb airmails him, but he stopped fucking running.
It's insane.
We fucking hate doing this. You and I, it's a long-standing, it is a long-standing policy of this podcast. We do not want to be one of those fucking sports radio things where it's always about effort, heart, hustle, right. intensity, where we question a guy's motives. We don't get it when it comes to draft stuff. We don't like to get into the off the field rumors and everything. We hate that kind of shit. Like, we gave DJ so much the benefit of the doubt, but it's to the point where his coaches are very clearly calling him out. And I think it's okay to just say, like, yeah, man, that's, and I had someone on Twitter who was like, he's tired of giving effort in bad systems. This is Ben Johnson. It's not a bad system.
Yeah, right.
Rome's getting open. You know why Rome's getting open? Because he's getting the fucking ball and he's trying. Like, it's not a bad system. He's just pouting. He's fucking pouting. And at a certain point, when you've been paid twice, the pouting is not okay. Do your job.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what happened the rest of that game, Caleb threw one pass after that DJ's way. And it's because DJ was the only guy open on the play. Yeah. Every other play where maybe DJ was the first read, Caleb was like, I can't trust this guy. And it feels like that relationship is over. It feels like Caleb at that moment just said, I don't trust you. I can't trust you to be where I need you. Like, this is done. I'm going to look for Rome because I know Rome is going to work for the ball. I know he's going to be where he's supposed to be.
I'm not a game. Same with Oz. I mean, normally, like, people, I saw someone like, why is he throwing to Oz Zacchaeus when DJ Moore is so much better? And like, yeah, I mean, because it's simple, because he's trusting that it might only be a 4-yard gain, but he's trusting Oz is going to be where he's supposed to be and give him those 4 yards. He doesn't know where DJ is going to be at this point, and he can't trust him. He can't trust DJ not to leave him, hang him out to dry. It's pretty noteworthy how much he clearly trusts some guys and how much he doesn't trust DJ Moore. And I don't think he should. And so this is not a gambling podcast. I don't gamble. I don't know how to give gambling advice, but if you guys have any props for Luther Burden, over unders this week, I'd probably pound the over, whatever it is, if you can find them. So I think
DJ is in the doghouse. He is going to be blocking in this game.
I think we're going to see some Luther Burden, and I think we're going to see some Colston Loveland, but I don't think we're going to see a lot of DJ Moore this week.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, you know, we just spent 6 minutes. Yeah, I don't get that angry on this podcast often, but it does. I like DJ Moore a lot when he was a Panther, and I loved acquiring him from the Panthers. I thought, what an underrated guy. I can't believe we got a stud wide receiver in this trade as well. That's such a fleecing. And it feels a little bit like I have been hoodwinked by a guy who, you know, I really liked, and he is such a child. I don't know what you can do with that guy at this point. He's gotten so used to it too. He did all last year, like this little piss baby routine. I don't know how Caleb can't feel like he wasn't part of that hit piece. He wasn't one of the people feeding that information to this asshole who is calling him saying he's sashaying and he's like this gazelle and shit. Like, they're talking about having this wide receiver on the team, you know, and who, there's only one guy that could be who just openly hates Caleb.
Because we know Caleb and Keenan Allen were bros, and we know Rome Odunze and Caleb are bros. Rome's out here on the St. Brown Brothers podcast saying, like, why are people so mean to Caleb all the time? So we know, by process of elimination, it's not hard to figure out that DJ Moore is the one who's whining about fucking everything. And I honestly think DJ Moore, like, he's just so used to, in Carolina and then his year with Justin Fields, he's just so used to bad quarterbacks who don't read things out. They just stare him down and wait for him to get open and throw him the ball, that he does not know how to function in an actual offense with actual target distribution.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we'll see how this week plays out, but it sure feels like, you know, Ben Johnson even is just completely tired of them.
It felt like the message was sent. And I think they obviously anticipated that this was a possibility this year. That's why Luther Burden's on the roster. So, and that's the thing, like, at this point, DJ Moore, like, your replacement is on the roster. The coach has now called you out. Like, if this isn't going to get through to you, then nothing is.
Yeah. Okay. We will put a pin in DJ and we will see what we have to say about him next week. I guess I don't have too much to say about Braxton Jones other than get well soon, buddy.
Yeah,
don't look good. It sucks. This sucks.
Braxton has the Bear. Okay, so Dahlman, Tooney, Jackson, and Darnell Wright have combined for a total of 15 allowed pressures through two games.
Which is a lot.
What's that?
Which is a lot.
I mean, it's a.
Well, how many does Braxton have?
Braxton has allowed 13 by himself. So the Bears' offensive line as a unit has allowed 28 pressures. Now, to be fair, I don't think that necessarily means 28 separate pressures, because PFF will credit more than one guy with a pressure on the same play if they both allowed. Right. So it's probably not quite 28 total pressures distributed evenly, but still, those four are credited with a combined 15 pressures. Braxton alone is credited with 13 by himself. In terms of pass block efficiency, out of 167 qualified O-linemen right now on PFF, Braxton is 166th. It's to the point where you're like, if it keeps up this week, you almost have to start Theo Benedict, not because I'm under any illusions about Theo Benedict being good, but because statistically speaking, it's actually almost impossible to be worse than Braxton has been in terms of pressure allowed through two games. It's very bad.
Yeah.
It's grim. And it's upsetting because we were higher on Braxton than anybody. We got mad when people said that the Bears should take Olu Fashanu if he was there. Like, we believed in Braxton. And I don't think this is anything about Braxton's effort or anything like that. The dude is hurt. He's clearly not himself. His lower body clearly hasn't recovered from the injury he had. But the reality is, it doesn't matter. He is straight up dog shit right now.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, hey, 11 snaps, Theo Benedict, pretty good, according to PFF. I thought PFF was batshit crazy this week on their Bears ratings. I think it's kind of hard for them to judge in, like, this awful, like, nuclear holocaust-level blowout. They had, like, Theo Benedict played a good game. We think that went pretty well. They had Jonah Jackson playing a good game. I did go back and look at Jonah. A lot better than I thought he played. So I'll give him that, because after the game, I was like, God, I saw him get juked a couple times. But that was really the only issues that he had. It was the Braxton Jones show, and it was the Darnell Wright is committing penalties show in this game. And it derailed every single drive. It felt like it was one guy or it was the other. It was a total meltdown by the Bears offensive line. Braxton's got, yeah, like you said, he's got to be replaced. It's either got to be Benedict or it's got to be Trapillo, or, I mean, it's got to be somebody until he gets healthy. At least give him some time to work himself back into shape. We just pushed a guy back out there, right? In Jalen Johnson, and he's gone for the season now. So if you can see a guy who's obviously hurt, why are you playing him when he's dog shit right now?
I guess one last thing I did want to say on offense before we move to defense. DeAndre Swift is the fumble was bad, obviously, but like a couple of really damning statistics. And I was actually, in some ways, I almost feel better about this because the run game has been so inefficient. I was like, man, I'm really disappointed in how this run blocking is going with how much we spent on this interior. But then when I watched the tape and everything, I was like, I don't know. I feel like the run blocking was mostly there. Yeah. And PFF backed that up. And a couple others, but you know, there was right now the Bears they're 31st in rushing efficiency, despite the fact that they are apparently like first in the NFL right now in terms of yards before contact blocked up for guys.
And that is first in the league.
That is the most DeAndre Swift stat of all time. Now, granted, it's not all on DeAndre Swift because he's not doing his thing. He is, and it's very frustrating as always, but he's always been that guy, and it's always been frustrating. And so it's very hard to figure out why they didn't add a running back who can actually run through the tackles and just get what's blocked for him. Like,
absolutely. DeAndre around those the
guys
edge.
Are not hard to find. Like, we hear all the time about how running backs don't matter and it's a fungible position and you can just find guys on the street. Yeah. That requires you to actually go try to find them on the street.
Yeah. I mean, you hypothesized after week one, hey, maybe they see something in Roshan and he didn't.
And they didn't give him a carry.
And they didn't give him a fucking carry.
Third and inches and fourth and inches, and they run the two worst sneak attempts I've ever seen in my life with a quarterback who's not that tall.
Not that I want to see Poles make any kind of move, but for the love of Christ, like, Tank Bigsby just got traded for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, where was Tank Bigsby? Why not Brian Robinson, man?
Where Tyler Algier is just hanging out behind Bijan Robinson, like a really good running back.
Yeah, it's incredibly bad that they. Yeah, so I mean, I'm hoping, I had heard this offseason like that Ben Johnson was surprisingly high on Roschon Johnson, and I mean, I was like, I don't know about that, but I'm willing to trust Ben Johnson here if that is the case. But like, you got to use him then, man, if you believe in him, allegedly.
He's so, giving and Kyle Manunga seven snaps, seven carries.
Right, and someone, you know, someone did say like, well, I mean, Roschon missed so much time. This was the first week he was even back at practice. They probably aren't ready to, okay, that's fine. But like this game against Dallas, you got to give, if you actually believe in Roschon, you got to give him some carries. If they don't this week, then I'm like, you don't believe in Roschon. For whatever reason, Ryan Poles just didn't want to make a fucking move at running back. And I'm going to get very, very angry.
Yeah. I guess one last thing on the offense. A lot of people want
to know. No, I already said one last thing on the offense. So.
We got to mention it because it's come up lately. I think it sounds like Ben is going to be getting the tight ends more in play this game. So I will hold off on discussion of our magical disappearing first round pick until.
Well, I also think some of the where are the tight ends is answered by Braxton Jones allowing 13 pressures in two games, guys. Where are the tight ends? They're being asked to chip a lot, guys. They're not being released in the pattern all of the time. That's where the tight ends are right now. The left tackle problem is the problem. So
very true. Okay. Yeah. Well, we got to get one thing out of the way on defense, Kyle, before we talk about anything else. We are the proud owners of a cornerback who has given up a perfect passer rating to opposing quarterbacks and has given up the most yards per coverage snap in the NFL to boot. So pretty much fundamentally the worst corner in the NFL right now. Everybody give Tyreek Stevenson a hand. Well done. That's really impressive, Tyreek. I'm shocked. I didn't think anybody could run the gamut like that and continue to hold down their starting job, but we don't have the horses. So you are going to have to keep playing. Turn it around. You're covering CeeDee Lamb this weekend, Tyreek, for the love of God. And you know what? PFF said Nashon Wright was worse. I'm going to jump off a bridge. We have no corners, Kyle, on this team right now.
Yeah. It's incredible how quickly our corner depth has evacuated. And I have to say, I'm pretty upset about the fact that Kyler Gordon, they treated him like he was a game time decision week one, but here we are in week three, and he's just, I don't know. We don't know when he'll be back. And I'm not saying I want them to rush him back.
Yeah,
but because we just saw how badly that works out. But like, boy, it really sucks that like we don't even have an estimate on when Kyler Gordon's going to be back. Also, I voiced my skepticism of the Kyler Gordon extension precisely because he misses time. And again, we talked about this when Nate Davis was the starting guard. If your plan is it's okay that we don't have an incredible pass rush because we're going to play elite man coverage with our corners, and then that'll free us up to send blitzes because we have Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson. You have to factor in that Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson both tend to miss about four games a year at least. So you need to have crazy good corner depth behind them if that's your plan. And it's the corner depth is already gone. So it's not good. And I have to say, Travis, you get to have your little victory lap, I guess, because I liked Tyreek coming out of the draft. I thought he looked promising as a rookie. I thought he actually looked a little better sometimes in coverage last year, but it got buried under, you know, the fail Mary and everything that came from that. So I've been a Tyreek defender, but man, he has been worse than even your great pessimism of him so far through two games.
He has been worse than my pessimism. I think the most damning part is through the entire first half, it felt like the Lions' entire game plan was to look at the defense, ask where's Tyreek, find him, and then just throw the ball at him. And that is so, so frustrating because that right now is supposedly our top line corner because we have so many injuries in the secondary. And they're not even going after these guys who you've never heard of, like McLeod. You know, they're like, yeah, Tyreek Stevenson, that's the guy I want. Remember the guy who was looking at the crowd while the Hail Mary was being completed? Let's see, you know, what he can do. The answer is he can't cover NFL wide receivers, I guess. And I don't know if maybe the Hail Mary broke him. You know, he was definitely better before that play. And I said at the time, like, I think this is just, I don't think you come back from this kind of thing in the NFL. And it honestly feels like he's just never come back from that. And he's getting worse and worse, and he is becoming worse than whoever we can pull off the practice squad to run out there. I don't know how long I don't know how long you can continue to do this. We've got Jaquan Brisker out there firing off tweets like, hey, throw me in at corner, you know, put me up on the line and put, you know, Owens back where Jaquan is. And when for however damaged Jaquan seems to be mentally, if you have any safety saying, just play me at corner at this point, guys, you know, that's exactly as bad as it is for the Bears right now.
Yeah. And I don't think, I do think Dennis Allen has a history of figuring it out, even with injury devastated units. So I don't think that they'll give up 50 points with regularity. I think he'll find something that.
Did you have to say that out loud?
Yeah, I did. I think he'll find something that's a little bit more workable. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to pretty much, not that I ever thought it was the most likely. I think you have to put, even though I am, and we sounded very optimistic in the first, I am optimistic about Caleb and the eventual upward trajectory of this offense. I think you could put playoffs to bed already with this defense, man. It's not looking good. The Packers are going to rip us. Matt LaFleur is going to do simply heinous things. So just prepare for that now. Just make your peace with God now.
Yeah, with Jalen Johnson gone and with Kyler Gordon seeming to, you know, we just don't know how bad it is for Kyler Gordon. And with Tyreek Stevenson having fallen off a cliff, there's no help coming. No help in the secondary.
Yeah, I was disappointed originally that their bye week comes so early in the season, but now I think it's a good thing because like maybe they get a chance to get Kyler and get something going after the bye, but whew, yeah, it's gonna be ugly for a bit, gang.
Yeah, let's not disregard that our linebackers are also in coverage a lot here, and our linebackers have been pretty bad outside of Noah Sewell, who has been a pleasant surprise on this defense. Seems like after that nice first week, which we talked about last week, he had a good week. He earned about half the defensive snaps this week, even with Edwards back, which is great. It's a good sign from Dennis Allen, recognizing what he's got there. So that's good to see. He still played well this week. He has been a fantastic addition to this defense, which is great because Tremaine Edmonds, one of the most expensive players on this team, is a disaster who is essentially unplayable.
He does suck. Yes.
And Edwards is who he is. He's not awful, but there are things he can't do. And
he's hurt. So
Eddie's hurt. And the other guy we've got is a fourth round flyer on a guy who should have been an undrafted free agent. So we don't really have a whole lot going on there. Help is also not on the way at linebacker. So there's not a road that I could see where this defense just suddenly turns it around and is even respectable at some point, which just puts further, you know, pressure on Caleb in the offense. But
yeah, you just hope that they can,
what do you hope? That's exactly how I feel. Like,
you just hope that they can get to just like regular NFL bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
this is not regular NFL bad. That's like, this isn't like the 26th, best defense in the NFL. This is like, we could approach some historical numbers here if this continues. And the thing is, yeah, allegedly, Big Bill didn't play too bad this game. So said PFF. Again, I think maybe there were some misfiring wires going on over there, but allegedly he played okay. Grady Jarrett played poorly. I wonder why. He was injured coming into the game. And again, we're running an injured player out there because our second round pick,
Shamar Turner
is unplayable. And another guy, Zach Pickens, isn't on the team anymore. We have a whole rant about Ryan Poles coming, but like you said last week, wait, there will be time. There will be time to rant. We were going to have to spend a whole fucking episode on this guy. But yeah, I mean, our interior defensive line can't get a break. And because of that, they're getting run over. Dio Dangbo went back to exactly what Dio Dangbo has done in Indianapolis, which is just be a non-factor in the game. Montez Sweat allegedly played well. He had a sack that got called back because Tyreek Stevenson is a mess. But other than that, I mean, just non-factors, right? I mean, Goff gets the ball off fast. you don't often get a ton of sacks on Goff because he's just going to whip the ball out there. We saw against Green Bay that even if it's not productive, he will throw a 2-yard pass if he's under duress. So maybe that was part of it, but God, to me, it didn't feel like the defensive line was doing much of anything in this game. I don't know if you checked that out afterwards, if you saw anything different, but I didn't see Montez Sweat out there causing a bunch of disruptions. I've seen a bunch of advanced stats that show that Jervon Dexter has played pretty well. But again, that's not something I saw in game two. Game one, I was encouraged, but game two, it just felt like there wasn't anything going on there on the defensive line. And that has to be another bullet in the chamber, in the machine gun that I want to fire at Ryan Poles, that throughout his tenure, this defensive line has been horrendous. And I mean, he hasn't done anything to better it. He's tried and he has failed in every acquisition and every draft pick. You know, maybe with the exception of Jervon at this point.
Well, and I mean, right now, I don't think Jervon looks particularly great. I think he's struggling a little bit with the switch from a one gap system to a two gap system. You see Jervon, he's thinking again, just like when he was at Florida, he's thinking again, and you hope that he can quickly get to where he's not thinking so much anymore. But yeah, I mean, I feel like tried for the longest time to steer a middle ground on Ryan Poles, but it's pretty inexcusably terrible that this is the fifth most expensive defense in football. He has spent so much money and I mean, so many picks on this defense. Let's see here in his draft, we've got Kyler, Brisker, Jervon, Pickens, Tyreek, Shamar. That's five, top 64. So essentially second or first round picks that he's spent on defense in his tenure. And the only one of those currently on the field and arguably contributing and not super well through two games this year is Jervon Dexter. You have all of the money sank into free agency in TJ Edwards, who then inexplicably got extended. I still don't understand why they made that extension happen. And at the time, I even said on this podcast, I had bad feelings about it, or maybe I didn't say it on the podcast. I said to you, that feels to me like when Pace extended Trevathan, and that was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
And that's what it's looking like right now, because he's old and he's oft injured. And then Tremaine Edmonds has been useless. And Kevin Byard, I thought, was really good last year, but looks like age has finally caught up to him this year. And Grady Jarrett has, you know, it's not good.
He's old and he got injured. And then they ran him back out there.
Yeah.
I think it's been said, I can't remember where I saw it, but like the best player on this defense was drafted by his predecessor, and that guy's injured too.
Yeah.
So there's just not much else to say. The only thing, like if we start in on Ryan Poles, it's gonna be more than an hour.
My current plan right now is, since the Bears have that early bye that week, is probably just gonna be the episode where we take an entire hour to go, maybe even move by move, and just finally rip Ryan Poles a new asshole. Because we both, I think we tried to say, like, we can see the vision here, but it's risky on a lot of different things. And we're starting to see, he's finally in the point where, like, it's time to put up or shut up on most of these moves, and he has now missed at a staggering rate. Like, you expect a GM to miss, like, that's the thing about being a GM, is we talk all the time about how nobody's really good at drafting, but you can be bad at it. So like, even the good teams only are lucky to hit 50% of the time. But if you're missing 90% of the time, then you are bad at this. We are in Al Davis territory right now in terms of how some of these moves are working out, and in how bad their pro scouting has been too, and the number of players who come to Chicago and have immediately gotten worse under him. The Nate Davises of the world, the Coleman Sheltons of the world, the Chase Claypools, the just all of these players that they brought in who then immediately stunk. It's inexplicable that we're still here, and they might still have a chance. Like, all hope is not lost, because I actually do think that Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson are both going to be good at what they do. And if you have the coach and the quarterback, you'll always have a chance, but it must be said that they, that even if that works out, we have hope going forward, but it's less hope than it should be because they're going to have to fight with one hand tied behind their back because of the mess that Ryan Poles has already made around them.
Yeah. And I could not have said it better. Is that, do we want to leave it on that? I guess if you made it here, folks, we'll say exactly what we said last week. If you send me, what should I have people send me this week, Kyle? Pizza rolls came aplenty last week for the Discord. Or people explaining to me that they didn't know how to send a pizza roll over the internet. That was fine too. A bit of a cop out, but I still let you in. What should they send me now? $20?
Well, email Travis at the Star Kyle Orton Gmail, and since you sent Travis pizza rolls last week, for me, I want, and Travis will forward these to me. Tell us who your favorite Byzantine emperor was.
Of course.
And we'll see that. And then if you do that, Travis will send you the link to the Discord, spelled DISKORD. Thank you, Travis. Since you didn't think of it the first time, I had to.
Well, see, when you say it out loud, you have to spell it. The Discord, you don't. The Discord.
Right. The Discord.
Like, there's a K. But yeah,
no, we've got over 20 freaks in that Discord right now. I can't believe that that happened.
Kyle out here is freaking out every time a new person joins in. Why do so many people want to be in here?
I mean, back in the original iteration of the Scottcast, we had the shout box that we ran on the blog, so people would hop in there on Sundays and watch Bears games with us and chat. And you know, it was a hopping day. In the shout box if we had six or seven people. And in most heartwarming fashion, I think all six or seven of those people from the original version are now in the Discord 10 years later, which is amazing. But also, you know, 15 other freaks. So, like, we have more people in there than I thought.
Kyle was like, the only people that listen to us are probably Nick, Pat, and the John Clave. And other than that, who cares, right? Yeah, and all these people came rushing in, yeah.
So yeah, email Travis if you want the link to the Discord. I'm not just going to like tweet it out for the freaks of the world. But yeah, and then I guess if we want to say anything about the Cowboys game coming up, I would really like Caleb Williams to rip Matt Eberflus a new asshole. I think that's what we're hoping for.
We're not very forward facing. I'm sorry on this podcast. This is going to be a shootout, folks. I'm expecting 49-45. I'm going to say Bears because the Cowboys just seem like a team that's destined to get really, really close and lose one score games this year. They did win their last one score game.
It would be really funny if the Cowboys lost like 8-1 score games this year, because then it would be pretty much incontrovertible that they were going to be like a playoff team if they just had Micah Parsons, and that's what Jerry Jones deserves. So
that's right. Yeah. So fuck Matt Eberflus. Hopefully we get the win this Sunday. Hopefully we just see Caleb on an upward trajectory. I'm not punting on the season or anything. I already said 2022 Lions. I'm expecting us to get better in the second half.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as I'm a lot less happy to be here than I was in 2022. You know, in 2022, we were like, look, as long as Justin shows progress, it doesn't matter if they lose games. It matters that they're losing games. I'm pretty mad about it. I'd like the GM publicly executed for it, but we can survive them losing games as long as Caleb and Ben Johnson keep trending up throughout the season. And right now I still feel like that's going to happen. So I'm not despondent yet, but you know, it's not where you want to be, man.
Yeah. Giving up 50 points is not where you want to be. All right.
Wow. That's the hard hitting analysis that people guys, have to expect from us.
You don't want to lose by a little, but it's worse to lose by a lot.
It is.
It hurts. It's your worst as a team if you lose by more.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, good night, homies. Way out on that bummer's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you don't leave it.